The headlines: a fresh escalation between Israel and Palestinian resistance forces in Gaza, hours after U.S. president leaves the occupied territories. Ukraine reports heavy Russian attacks on several of its cities, leaving at least 34 people dead. And Iran is disappointed by the UN Special Rapporteur welcoming a life sentence handed to an Iranian citizen in Sweden based on false allegations. Welcome from our headquarters in Tehran. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisum Shahmadi, and these are our top stories this hour. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has reacted to the latest Israeli airstrikes on the Gaza Strip, calling them another crime committed against Palestinians. Hamas spokesman Hassan Qassem said the bombardment of Gaza and the intimidation of innocent people are part of Tel Aviv's atrocities and terrorist behavior. He stressed that Israel will not be able to shatter Palestinians' will and resistance despite all of its terrorist tools and U.S. backing. He said Palestinian people and groups will press ahead with their resistance until the Israeli regime is forced out of the occupied territories. Early on Saturday, Israel hit Gaza, saying the attack targeted Hamas military positions in response to rockets fired from the territory. Our correspondent in Gaza, Ashraf Shannon, says Israel fired at least a dozen rockets into the besieged territory, causing explosions there.
The amount of rockets that were fired by the Israeli regime were very high. At least 12 rockets were fired, and loud explosions were heard all over the Gaza Strip. This Israeli attack is the first time in 1 month, and it's the first time to happen under the leadership of acting Israeli Prime Minister Yair Lapid. The failure of the Iron Dome interception system to intercept one of the rockets, that's 50% failure. And I think this is a message by resistance groups by firing the rockets to in reaction to the visit by U.S. President Joe Biden, who on the first leg of his trip to the Israeli regime visited one of the factories that manufacture the Iron Dome missile interception system, and this shows you 50% failure of such systems. Last year, during the Sword of Al-Quds battle, the failure almost reached 80%. As more rockets being fired, the failure of the system increases.
U.S. President Joe Biden has once again accused Tehran of what he calls destabilizing activities in West Asia. Biden, who was in Saudi Arabia as part of his West Asia tour, was addressing the GCC Plus summit, summit meeting in Jeddah. He stressed the U.S. will remain as an active player in the region and will not walk away to leave a vacuum to be filled by China, Russia, or Iran. He also claimed that Washington will help the countries in the region defend themselves against foreign threats. So this is while Iran has time and again stressed that sustainable peace and stability could be achieved only through cooperation among regional countries. Tehran argues that imported security will not serve long-term interests of regional states.
U.S. President Joe Biden and Israeli Prime Minister Yair Lapid have reiterated their anti-Iran positions in a joint declaration. The two leaders signed this statement after holding a one-on-one meeting on Thursday morning in occupied territories, on the second day of Biden's four-day tour of West Asia. The statement says that the U.S. will use all elements of national power available to it to deny Iran the ability to arm itself with nuclear weapons. The joint declaration also includes a pledge by Washington to continue U.S. military aid to Israel. Hours after the announcement of the declaration, Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi warned of harsh and regrettable responses, saying any interventions of foreign powers in the region only results in crises and destabilization, while describing Iran's military power as a security factor. Observers believe that the unconditional support of the U.S. for Israel as the only regime that openly threatens Iran with military aggression can further embolden Tel Aviv.
I don't think that Biden's visit to the Middle East has really anything to do with the arms sale. I think that essentially he's come first and foremost to try to get the Saudis to push up oil production to try to bring down prices at the gas pumps in the United States as Biden moves toward November 5th midterm elections for Congress and the Senate, where right now he's expected not to do too well. What I think this stems from is Israel's push to try to get the United States thinking somehow that they're going to intimidate Iran, which is ludicrous. That's not going to happen.
Iran topped the agenda of talks between the U.S. president and Israeli officials during the latest regional tour by Biden. They discussed Iran's nuclear energy program and its military might, which they labeled as a threat to the region. That comes as the U.S. has been pushing for the formation of a NATO-style military alliance against Iran in the region.
U.S. President's visit to the region comes as Washington and Israel have been pushing for an alliance of regional countries against Iran, the so-called Arab NATO. At the heart of such military alliance lies the perceived threat from Iran. Iranian officials have repeatedly denounced the destabilizing activities of Israel as the main source of insecurity in the region, warning regional countries of the perils of allowing the regime to establish a foothold in the region. Regional states and nations will not achieve stability and peace as long as the fake Israeli regime remains the first stop of U.S. President's trips, with the main target being to preserve the regime's security and dominance. The Islamic Republic of Iran considers the security of its neighbors as its own security. Despite the growing relations between Israel and the Persian Gulf countries amid gradual American withdrawal from the region, several observers consider the emergence of a genuine NATO-style alliance unlikely.
You understand how much more powerful Iran has become in the region precisely because of its alliance with China and Russia. And so if you look at the offshoot of this, is that any threat to Iran also becomes a threat to Russia. Now, Israel, people in Tel Aviv, they understand this. They understand it's been a shift in the balance of power in the region, and this frightens them. The reaction has been the attempt to build some sort of Middle East NATO. And that's not going to fly. It's not going to fly any more than the talk of European unity. That doesn't exist vis-a-vis Russia. It's just a contrived narrative.
A number of controversial questions are being posed by those analyzing Biden's visit and the so-called Arab NATO. The first question is whether the Arab states need such an alliance. Is the existing joint Arab defense framework so useless that it must be replaced by this new regional NATO? Second, the pact expects to be formed against Iran, but there are differing views on Iran's policies in the region. To include Israel, an occupier of Arab lands, in a new framework against Iran would only exacerbate the regional crises. In fact, a number of Arab officials have openly said in the past few days that their countries would not be a part of an alliance against Iran. And last but not least, not every country has normalized relations with Israel to form a common pact.
Moving on, several Ukrainian cities report heavy Russian attacks, the latest in a series of hits by Moscow in recent weeks using long-range missiles. Kiev says at least 34 civilians have been killed in the last 3 days. Russian missiles struck central cities of Dnipro and Vinnytsia while prompting warning sirens in the capital, Kiev. Russia has repeatedly denied targeting civilians. It says the strike in Vinnytsia hit a building where top Ukrainian officials were meeting with arms suppliers. Meanwhile, Kiev says that counterstrikes on the Russian military logistics centers in recent weeks have reduced Moscow's offensive potential. Ukraine says Western weapons, including U.S.-made rocket systems, have had an impact on the battlefield and could change the war's dynamic. Iran's top rights official, Kazem Gharibabadi, has slammed the UN Special Rapporteur on Human Rights in Iran for hailing the life sentence handed to the Iranian national Hamid Nouri by a Swedish court. Nouri was arrested in 2019 over allegations of human rights violations against members of the MKO terrorist group. He was sentenced in what Iran calls an unfair trial by an incompetent court. Earlier, we were joined by Nouri's legal counsel for the details on the latest court ruling.
Sentence is not in line with the standards of a fair trial, because the first principle of due process is the principle of innocence, which has, in my idea and based on the law theories, has been violated by the Swedish court, because they did not do any investigation, any comprehensive and independent investigation. They only relied on what has been said by the plaintiffs, and the prosecutor didn't do any investigation. She didn't move to Iran or even to Iraq, because the Mujahideen were located at that those days in Iraq, and even she didn't request any thing from the UN Security Council, because the attacks, as claimed by the prosecutor, has been committed or occurred after the resolution 598, which was a resolution by the UN Security Council. If that attack was serious, was considered as an armed attack, actually we would have the reaction of the UN Security Council, but the prosecutor didn't ask anything from the UN Security Council. It shows that originally this case has been filed by political motivations, and we clearly see that the standards of a due process has been violated. We have good reasons, strong reasons to do appeal against this, I think, this weak judgment, which is clearly against the standards of law.
Albania's police and courts are providing widespread support for the anti-Iran MKO terrorist group, which is based in that country. This according to Olsi Ijenski, who is an Albanian journalist and historian. The journalist said in a series of connected tweets that the MKO members who want to abandon the terror outfit are terrorized, intimidated, and jailed. The journal says a police raid the homes of the defectors upon orders from the group's leaders and the U.S. Embassy in Albania. The terrorist cult launched a campaign of bombings and assassinations in Iran, mostly in the 1980s. It has enjoyed freedom of activity in the West since being delisted by the EU and the U.S. in 2009 and 2012. Iranian authorities hold the MKO or MEK responsible for the death of more than 17,000 people in Iran. Editor of Veterans Today, Kevin Barrett, says it is shameful and hypocritical of the West to sponsor and arm the MKO terrorist group, which is responsible for the death of several thousand Iranians.
It's really curious because we're living in an era in which so-called terrorism has been systematically demonized, and the United States has proclaimed that it's supposedly leading a global war on terror that will never end, inaugurated, of course, by the false flag events of September 11th, 2001. It's really strange because this, if any group on Earth deserves to be targeted and disbanded forcibly, it's this group. They're completely out of control, and it's shameful that the West has been sponsoring these people and arming them and helping them organize and giving them sanctuary in a number of countries so that they can plan these acts of violence. And they're not even hiding the fact that they are violent, that they're not committed to any kind of open society values whatsoever. So once again, the hypocritical West, which pretends to be in favor of liberal values and free press and so on and so forth, is actually supporting this group that murders 17,000 people in Iran and attacks journalists and basically is running around like another Jim Jones, Jonestown kind of group, except instead of having to run off to Guyana, they're being put up in the best kinds of places across Europe. So it's completely shameful, and it's bizarre, and it would be funny if people weren't suffering so badly from it.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
A major benefit brought by Imam Khomeini was familiarizing people with concept of resistance. This is the part of the speech delivered on June 4th, 2022 by Imam Khomeini, the leader of the Islamic Revolution. On the 33rd demise anniversary of Imam Khomeini, greetings be upon him. The next recommendation is that you should reveal the enemy's lies, deceptions, and psychological warfare. At the time of Imam, there was no internet, nor did satellites exist in this form. In those days, Imam used to say that the enemy fought against us with his pen. Imam was aware of this. Today, the issue is not about pens, rather it is about cyberspace, satellites, and psychological warfare. One that is comprehensive and rampant everywhere. You should not let the enemy's psychological warfare impact the country. Let me cite a small example of psychological warfare. They stole our oil on Greek shores. Then our self-sacrificing and valiant soldiers made up for it and confiscated the enemy's ship carrying oil. Then the enemy accused Iran to theft via his comprehensive propaganda and media empire. Who is a thief? You stole our oil, we took it back from you. Taking back stolen property is not theft. It is you who are thieves.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
The Americans order the Greek government, and they obey by stealing our oil. Well, these are instances of psychological warfare. You should confront such psychological warfare, examples of which occur every day. The next recommendation is that you must make the most of the people's faith for producing good deeds. The people are pious and have faith. This faith can produce good actions. You can do this. Our magnanimous Imam was a master at this. Imam was a genius in making the most of the people's faith for producing good deeds. The next recommendation is that you should not let some people pretend that the country has reached a dead end. This is some people's job right now in cyberspace. Now some individuals do it out of negligence or they are paid to do it. I do not know, but they want to pretend that the country has reached a dead end. No, the country will not reach a dead end. This happened at the time of Imam too. At that time, some people wrote in newspapers that the country had reached a dead end. Imam said, no, it is you who reached the dead end. The Islamic Republic will not reach a dead end. He said that it was they who had reached a dead end. This is the truth of the matter.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
Hello, I'm Mubarak Kenya, and a big welcome to this week's edition of Africa Today.
Stay tuned with Africa Today.
Africa Today.
China has overtaken the United States as the foreign power seen as having the biggest positive influence in Africa by young people. Now, this is according to a survey across 15 major African countries. A young African explains one of the reasons why China is viewed positively in the continent.
China is the manufacturing center of the world. So most of the products that we consume, whether it's in tech or every consumer product, has an origin from China.
Hello, I'm Mubarak Kenya, and a warm welcome to Africa Today, a weekly program that gives you an alternative view of events making headlines in Africa. This week's edition is focusing on reports of China's increasing popularity among young people in Africa, while the United States sees a steep decline of its influence in the continent. The second segment of our show is on Algeria's decision to suspend a two-decades-old friendship treaty with Spain after Madrid reversed decades of neutrality in the Western Sahara dispute. Our experts will be giving us their incisive analysis on these two subjects.
China overtakes U.S. in Africa. A recent survey conducted by the Ichikowitz Family Foundation found that 76% of 4,507 young Africans across 15 countries named China as a foreign power with a positive influence on their lives, compared with 72% for the U.S. In 2020, when the inaugural study of 18 to 24-year-olds was conducted, 83% of respondents saw the U.S.'s influence as positive, while the figure for China was 79%. The results are a clear indicator that in Africa, China is winning the battle against geopolitical rivals such as the U.S. and the European Union.
Beijing has invested heavily into African infrastructure over the past two decades and supplies the continent with affordable consumer goods ranging from mobile phones and solar panels to shovels and plastics. A young Kenyan manager at a Chinese tech company in Nairobi says China brings affordable technology to Africa.
Wasted a lot of research of the consumer needs in Africa, and they're able to bring in a solution just what the consumer requires. So the technology in that China is applying, they bring about very affordable devices, they bring very affordable technology.
Now, for more on the rise of China and the decline of the United States in Africa, we have contacted Lawrence Freeman, a political economic analyst for Africa. Thanks a lot, sir, for your time today.
Glad to be with you.
Now, are you surprised that China has overtaken the U.S. as the foreign power, seen as having the biggest positive influence in Africa among young people?
Not really. I expected as much. There has been really no policy coming from the United States for many decades that actually promotes the sovereignty of nations and the economic development of African nations. And currently, the Biden administration, President Joe Biden, has no policy, none, for Africa. And the default is to do nothing to help the African nations. China is playing a much more positive role, in particular economic development of the nations. And therefore, it is not surprising at all that the young people see China as a more positive influence.
China has gained positive influence in Africa through aid, trade, and investments to kickstart the continent's structural transformation process. Unlike the U.S. and other Western countries, which meddle in the internal affairs of African countries, China maintains a policy of mutual respect. This is the point made by Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta while speaking early January at a ceremony in the country's main port city of Mombasa to mark the completion of a Chinese-built oil terminal.
Our partnership with China is not a partnership based on China telling us what we need. It is a partnership of friends working together to meet Kenya's social economic agenda.
What are the main reasons behind China winning the battle against geopolitical rivals such as the U.S. and the European Union for the hearts and minds of Africans?
Most importantly, China has a completely different outlook of how to coordinate policy with other nations, and in particular the African nations. The United States has no policy toward Africa right now, and the Europeans very little. But China wants to develop and work with African nations. It wants to help these nations lift their population out of poverty, which China has done successfully. And therefore, they're making long-term investments in energy, railroads, ports, dams, for the development of these nations. And this is seen positively by Africans and African youth because it can improve their economy, create jobs, improve their standard of living. The United States has no policy, and therefore it's the reason that China is succeeding in winning the hearts and minds of Africans.
Western powers, especially the United States, are peddling the narrative of China's engagement in debt-trap diplomacy. Chinese foreign minister has rejected the claims, saying the so-called Dead top diplomacy is not a fact, but a malicious hype up by some people.
It is speculation being played out by some with ulterior motives. It's a narration by those who do not want to see development in Africa. If there is any trap, it is poverty and underdevelopment. China would like to welcome other countries friendly towards Africa to eliminate poverty.
China has successfully positioned itself as a major trading partner and investor in Africa, displacing Europe as the most important partner in large infrastructure projects and the exploitation of raw materials. So, it is not just the United States that's been overtaken by China in Africa. The EU has also been compelled to give way to China in the continent. What are some of the main factors behind the negative perception towards Western powers in Africa?
Western powers are still treating Africa as if they were colonies. They tell them what to do. They tell them what they can't do. They tell them what they should do. They're trying to pressure. There's a bill in the Congress, the United States Congress, to pressure African nations not to work with Russia. African nations have been told that they shouldn't be working with China and be taking in this debt, even though the largest amount of debt in African nations still owed to the West. They keep saying that African nations should do this, should do that. You have to follow our model of democracy. You have to carry out our model of human rights.
During the recent Group of Seven summit, leaders unveiled a $600 billion plan to rival China's Belt and Road Initiative. Here's the U.S. president making the announcement.
We're here today because we're making this commitment together as a G7 in coordination with one another to maximize the impact of our work. Collectively, we aim to mobilize nearly $600 billion from the G7 by 2027.
Today, G7 countries and their societies face huge economic challenges, and the declaration by Biden is seen as a tool to show the global audience that the U.S. still retains hegemony. Now, do you think this plan by the G7 will weaken China's growing influence in Africa?
No, not at all. I mean, first of all, going back to the Obama administration, don't forget Xi Jinping announced the Belt and Road in, November 2013, several offers by the Chinese to the Americans to join the Belt and Road were a veto, which was an act of stupidity by the Obama administration. And now, under the Biden administration, they say, well, we're going to rival the Belt and Road. Frankly, it's a fantasy. First of all, they're never going to be able to do it. The China development policy for Africa and other parts of the world, Asia, Latin America, is out of the box. It can't be put back in. The control of the unipolar world by the United States and the West is over. Russia's indicated that in another way. And what the Europeans and Biden had cooked up, I can tell you in advance, is not going to work. It's not going to have a big effect. And there's no way it's going to undermine China. China is here to stay and will soon be the largest economy in the world. And it's because of the West's failure to work with China that we have so many problems.
China is the largest developing country and has gained great experience in alleviating poverty. Beijing has shown it is willing to share its development experience with African countries.
I can say I'm very happy and honored to be among the first batch of female drivers in Kenya. And I've been able to learn so much from the company and from my Chinese teachers.
While most young people in Africa believe China is positively influencing their life, Western media outlets are using isolated incidents to pursue an anti-China narrative in Africa. Now, Mr. Freeman, what should Beijing do to further boost its positive image in Africa?
Well, there is a lot of prejudice, even among my African friends, against China. But it's hard to say exactly where it comes from. There are various forms of propaganda that came out that said China was stealing African resources. That's not true. There is problems of racism, which have been documented in certain countries. I think in the beginning, the Chinese used a lot of their own labor for these projects, which I understand is not the case now. So I think there are lingering problems. All nations have them, but clearly the pluses of China's involvement with African nations outweighs some of these possibly lingering problems. And therefore, you always look to try to promote the positive.
Well, there you have it. Despite U.S.-led Western propaganda, China is seen as a power with positive influence by most young people in Africa. We'd like to thank our expert today, Lawrence Freeman, a political economic analyst for Africa, for his insight. Now, our next topic is on Algeria's move to suspend a friendship treaty with Spain. But before that, we take a short break, so stay with us.
Algeria suspends friendship treaty with Spain.
You're listening to Africa Today. Africa Today is an analytical weekly review of political, economic, and social events in Africa, the world's second largest continent. The series is broadcast every week on Saturdays and Sundays by IRIB English Radio.
Algeria recently suspended a two-decades-old friendship treaty with Spain after Madrid reversed decades of neutrality in the Western Sahara dispute. Spain has publicly recognized an autonomy plan for the Western Sahara put forward by Morocco, which controls 80% of the disputed territory.
This move was the latest blow to increasingly fragile relations between Algiers and Madrid, which depends on Algeria for its natural gas supply. Algeria also suspended foreign trade in products and services with Spain amid the escalating dispute over the status of Western Sahara.
The Spanish Prime Minister has defended his country's agreement with Morocco, saying security and stopping illegal immigrants are a priority for Madrid.
We will proceed to the gradual reopening of the border crossings to ensure an orderly flow of people in complete safety and in compliance with the necessary health requirements, and goods will also flow normally.
Now, for more on the diplomatic spat between Algeria and Spain over the Western Sahara, we have contacted Abdurrahman Mohamed Ahmed, a political activist and a commentator. Thanks a lot, sir, for your time today.
Thank you very much for having me in your show.
Now, was Algeria justified in suspending foreign trade and a friendship treaty with Spain due to the dispute over the status of Western Sahara?
Yes, I believe that Algeria was totally justified in suspending foreign trade as well as the friendship agreement with the government of Spain. The reasons are multiple. Spain was a colonial power, and recently we saw actually that the behavior, the political behavior of the government of Spain was actually in line with other European countries like French, Britain, who are trying actually to create chaos and destabilization in their former colony in Africa. In line with that, I believe that the position taken by the Algerian government is commendable.
Algeria has long backed the Polisario movement that is seeking independence of the Western Sahara region claimed by Morocco. The Polisario movement, which fought a 15-year war with Morocco after Spanish colonialists withdrew in 1975, is demanding a referendum on independence. Algeria says that Spain's decision to recognize Morocco's plan of granting autonomy to Western Sahara is in violation of its legal, moral, and political obligations. Algeria's foreign minister expounds on his country's position towards Western Sahara.
Algeria reaffirms its support for the right of the Sahrawi people to self-determination, and we call upon the United Nations to assume their legal responsibilities towards the Sahrawi people and guarantee their inalienable rights. The organization of a free and fair referendum in order to enable this courageous people to determine their future and decide on their political future cannot forever be taken hostage by the intransigence of an occupying state.
What are the interests of Algeria in supporting the Polisario movement?
I believe that it's important for the viewer to understand that Western Sahara was occupied and colonized by the Spanish government. And that the proud people, the Sahrawi, actually fought against the Spanish colonization. And when they get rid of actually the Spanish colonization, then immediately after that, and when there was an agreement, especially in the 1975 afterwards, when there was an agreement with Mauritania, which was claiming part of the Western Sahara, that's when actually the monarchy in Morocco, I'm not talking about the people of Morocco. The people of Morocco deserve our respect because we know that they stand also for dignity and justice. But the government, especially the monarchy of Morocco, actually occupied in place of the Spanish colonization, the Western Sahara. And it was normal for Algeria. As I was saying previously, Algeria always stood with the African people for their freedom. So it was normal for the Algerian government to stood with the Polisario.
Spain is in a complicated situation because while it shares borders and strong economic ties with Morocco, it also depends partly on Algeria for natural gas. Spain's move to publicly recognize Morocco's plan to grant Western Sahara region autonomy is seen by analysts as a way of regaining control of its former colony.
Actually, the Spanish who was colonizing Western Sahara, and when they get kicked out by the resistance, the brave resistance of the Sahrawi people and the Polisario movement, they actually resort to ask the Moroccan monarchy to reoccupy Western Sahara and play the dirty interest, if we can say, of the Spanish colonization.
The European Union urged Algeria to reverse its decision, pressing for dialogue to resolve the dispute. Joseph Borrell, the High Representative of the European Union for Foreign Affairs, says Algeria is an important partner for the EU in the Mediterranean and has expressed hope that a swift solution will be found to fully re-establish commercial and investment relations between Algeria and Spain. Now, do you see a resolution soon, especially considering the fact that Europe needs Algeria's gas in view of the current dispute with Russia over the Ukraine crisis?
The EU position when it comes to Algeria is actually, it only shows the arrogance of this former colonizing power, and it's an arrogance actually that doesn't have, because if we remember maybe a couple 100 years ago, maybe this country were military powerful, economically also they were maybe a strong country, which is not the case today. So what we are witnessing, it's actually a proud African country, Algeria, who is actually showing with strength and who is actually calling for dialogue to solve some of the problem, which should be the norm when it comes to international relations. And then you have the EU who actually threatening Algeria and saying, no, you shouldn't actually call for a dialogue. You should just accept what we are dictating upon you. This will not work.
As Algeria moves away from Spain, it is enhancing ties with Russia amid the Ukraine conflict. Algiers abstained during a vote on an anti-Russia resolution at the United Nations General Assembly in March on the crisis in Ukraine. During his visit to Algeria in May, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov said the two countries are preparing a new strategic agreement.
We have confirmed today our mutual interest in preparing a new strategic document between our states, which will mark the passage of cooperation to a higher level.
And now my last question. Will the current crisis between Algeria and Spain move Algiers closer to Moscow?
I definitely hope that the current crisis that was instigated by the EU in order to humiliate another African country that played a historical role in the liberation of the African continent, meaning Algeria, will fail, and that this current crisis, a totally fabricated crisis, will actually let the Algerian government, the Algerian people, and the Algerian leadership actually to definitely turn the page of collaboration with a former colonizer that are actually sinking. They choose actually to go down in the history with the U.S. imperialism. So today, another choice is available for many African countries. And Algeria, like in the past, can show a leadership for many African countries by allying and strengthening their collaboration with the Russian government.
Well, there you have it. The meddling by Western powers will lead many African countries to embrace Russia. That's it for this week's edition of Africa Today. It's always great having you. Goodbye for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, everyone. Welcome to Arab English Radio. This is Asma, your humble host for today's episode, and you're hearing me from Q&A on Islamic Belief, where you could get the answers to all your questions. Well, today we have Dr. Karimi, scholar of religious studies, who will help us with the answers. Assalamu alaikum and welcome, Dr. Karimi.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah, and thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you here. Oh, Today's question is about the prophets. And we have in the Holy Book of Quran, in verse 110 from Surah Al-Kahf, that says, قُلْ إِنَّمَا أَنَا بَشَرٌ مِثْلُكُمْ يُوحَى إِلَيَّ. And we just want to focus on that part in which, well, actually the translation of that verse is that, say that I'm just a human being like the others, though I have revelations and there are manifestations upon me. So we just want to focus on that point that they say, the prophet is actually has to say that I'm like the other people. So now there is this question that, are they really like the normal, ordinary beings?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. This verse is talking about our prophet, peace be upon him, and his family. And as you rightly mentioned, the verse reads, إِنَّمَا أَنَا بَشَرٌ مِثْلُكُمْ. I am just a human being like you. But the point is that those people who, refer to this verse to somehow reduce the status and the position of the prophets, especially our prophet, they just pay attention to this part, and a mashar mithlukum, I'm a person like you, but just ignore the following phrase where God says, yuha ilay, it is revealed to me. It's like going, la ilaha illallah negates the existence of God because it says, la ilaha, there is no God. So without paying attention to illallah, the message is incomplete.
Considering just a short part of it and then deciding
exactly.
Based on that.
So this part of the verse has two messages. Ana basharun mithlukum, I'm a person, I'm a human being like you, but then yuha ilay, it's being revealed to me. I receive revelation. So what is the message of the first part? قُلْ إِنَّمَا أَنَا بَشَرٌ مِثْلُكُمْ يُوحَى إِلَيَّ has also been mentioned in chapter Fussilat, verse 6. And the point of this part is that some people objected and raised this issue that why there is no angel coming to us from God to as a kind of the prophet. So why a human being is being sent to us as the prophet? Or why the prophet is like us? I mean, he's eating food, he's walking in the bazaar, and so on and so forth. For example, in chapter Furqan, verse 7, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, أَعُوذُ بِاللَّهِ مِنَ الشَّيْطَانِ الرَّجِيمِ وَقَالُوا مَا لِهَذَا الرَّسُولِ. And they say, what sort of prophet is this? يَأْكُلُ الطَّعَامِ. He eats food. وَيَمْشِي فِي الْأَسْوَاقِ. And walks in the marketplaces. لَوْلَا أُنزِلَ إِلَيْهِ مَلَكٌ. Why has not an angel been sent down to him? فَيَكُونَ مَعَهُ نَذِيرًا. So as to be a warner along with him. So that was an objection against the prophet, that why the prophet is like us, a human being. So to answer the objection of the people, the Holy Prophet, first of all, is telling them that أَنَا بَشَرٌ مِثْلُكُمْ. Why do I take food? Because I'm a human being like you. Why I'm going to the marketplaces? Because I'm a human being. I need to go to buy food and buy whatever I need. Or in other verses, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala talks about the fact that the prophets also got married. I mean, this is a tradition for all the people, including the prophets. We have it about Prophet Nuh, Prophet Lut, and our prophet, peace be upon him, and his family. The next point is that when God says that أَنَا بَشَرٌ مِثْلُكُمْ, the prophets say that I'm a human being like you, it means that they will not live for eternity. They will die like any other human being as well. The same has been mentioned in other verses. For example, وَمَا جَعَلْنَا لِبَشَرٍ مِنْ قَبْلِكَ الْخُلْدِ. O prophet, eternity has not been there for any person before you. And إِنَّكَ مَيِّتٌ وَإِنَّهُمْ مَيِّتُونَ. This is another verse. You, O prophet, will also die, and they will die. Or كُلُّ نَفْسٍ ذَائِقَةُ الْمَوْتِ. Every person will taste the death. So when God is telling the people that أَنَا بَشَرٌ مِثْلُكُمْ is referring to the fact that if a prophet is going to be sent to the people, it cannot be an angel. It should be a human being.
A human being just like you.
Just like you. Just like you. Why? Because of at least two reasons. First of all, the Holy Prophet is a role model for human beings.
Exactly.
And if he's not a man, if he's not a human being, he cannot be a role model. Imagine if a jinn comes to the people as a prophet, or an angel comes to the people, and then tell them that please, fast for 30 days in hot summer.
Then the people will tell him, you're a jinn, that's
exactly,
easy for you.
Yeah, that's nothing for you. You're an angel, you do not need any food. So, a prophet from another so-called species cannot be a role model for the people. That is why, the human being need a prophet like themselves in the form of a human being. Interestingly, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says that if on the earth the angels were living, then an angel would have been sent to them as the prophet. Allah says in chapter Isra, verse 95, أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم, قُلْ لَوْ كَانَ فِي الْأَرْضِ مَلَائِكَةٌ يَمْشُونَ مُطْمَئِنِّينَ, say, had there been angels in the earth walking around and residing in it, like humans do, لَنَزَّلْنَا عَلَيْهِ مَنَ السَّمَاءِ مَلَكًا رَسُولًا, we would have sent down to them an angel from the heaven as the prophet. So that's the point. The prophet should be a role model. If the angels were living on the earth, the prophet would be an angel. Now we are living
since
as human beings.
Since we're human beings, the prophet must be a human being.
Exactly.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs on IRIB English Radio. You can send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
And the next point is that we know that we have the knowledge of the unseen. And as Muslims, we need to also believe in the world of the unseen. There are some, creatures, some facts that we are not able to see, but they are realities. And this is called Alamul Ghaib in the Noble Book of Quran and the Narrations. And we need to believe
that
in
that. That is the world of unseen.
Yeah, the world of the unseen. And the angels belong to that world. Now, one of the points is that when... first of all, we believe in God based on the rational arguments. We believe in the prophet based on the rational arguments. And when the prophet is telling us that there is the world of the unseen, we need to believe in that, although we are not able to see that. So it doesn't mean that our fundamental beliefs have no rationality. No, there is a kind of hierarchy beginning from God, going to the prophet, and proving the prophet, prophethood of our prophet and the Noble Book of Quran, and then we need to accept whatever is mentioned in the Noble Book of Quran, which of course is according to the intellect as well. Now, my point is that if the prophet were in the form of the angels, then, there is no issue of the believing in the world of the unseen, because people are seeing that angel, and there is no value for that anymore. So, the belief in the world of the unseen is valuable when you are not able to see that world. That is why when you have a prophet in the form of the human being and he tells you of the world of the unseen, then it makes much different for you to whether believe in the world of the unseen or not. It's been mentioned in the couple of verses of the Noble Book of Quran, for example, وَقَارُوا لَوْلَا أُنزِلَ عَلَيْهِ مَلَكٌ. They say, why has not an angel been sent down to him, that is the prophet? So it was a common objection of the polytheists that we need to see an angel, then we will believe in the prophet. But God says that, وَلَوْ أَنزَلْنَا مَلَكًا لَقُضِيَ الْأَمْرِ, were we to send down an angel, the matter would surely be decided. Meaning that then, everything is clear.
It was easier for all of you to believe.
And this world is the world of tests and, trial for the people to think and ponder and come to this conclusion that this is the prophet, and then they need to believe in the world of the unseen. So these are two points that the prophet should be in the form of a human being to be a role model and for the importance of the belief in the world of the unseen. That is the message of the first part. قُلْ إِنَّمَا أَنَا بَشَرٌ مِثْلُكُمْ. But does it mean that, so if this is